Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Let's get to five questions, five answers. We do this every Monday and Friday on the show, and we call it onsides, offsides. So let's not even waste five more seconds. Hot take hickey, or maybe hack take hickey. Hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, what do you got?
All right, tonight, Zach, San Diego State looks to win their first national championship in program history, while UConn attempts to win their fifth since 1999.
So blue far, blood, blue blood, baby. How about them Huskies? The drive for five.
The Huskies, so far in their five wins, have blown the doors off everyone. They have averaged their average margin of victory so far in these five games, 20.6 points per game. Oofa. Now, the Aztecs have been defensive stalwarts so far, but do face their toughest test to date. UConn is currently favored by 7.5 points. So, onsides or offsides, Zach, UConn will win and cover the 7.5 point spread.
As Shaka Smart was saying, they're just so tough to defend because of how deep they are. Like, Hawkins is sensational. Then you have Sonogo down low, who's just a force to be reckoned with. If he needs a breather, if he gets in foul trouble, you got Klingon coming off the bench. Then you got the West Coast kid as well, who's pretty damn good young player. It's just, this team is ridiculous. And they're so deep. And their only losses this year have been in the Big East. And they went on that dominant start to start the year. That they went on a little bit of a hiccup. But after that, it's kind of weird, Hickey, that this team didn't get more love heading into the tournament. I know it's easy to say now, but I think a lot of people were just caught up in the lack of tournament success recently. And even if it's like for a 2-3 year period, you develop kind of that tag of, okay, until you do it, I'm going to bet against you. And so far that's come back to just burn everyone when it comes to UConn.
And yours truly. I've been thinking that same logic. Eventually it's got to come back down. Eventually they can't play this well for four, five, six games on our own, for five games, and really four and a half, four games, and then the half against Iona, they've done so. They've absolutely done so.
And it's pretty much been the entire season. Like, you look back, they started off the year 14-0. Then I know they went through a rough patch where they were 16-6. But then after that loss to Xavier on January 31st, they only had two losses after that. To Creighton in the Big East. We know how good Creighton is. Before the year, they were picked to win the entire Big East. And they lost by three. And then they lost to two in the Big East tournament to Marquette. So ever since that loss in January 25th to Xavier, where it was only 82-79, they have won every game but two. And the two games, they lost by a combined 5 points. So outside of that little stretch from December 31st to January 25th, that was their only down period this year in college basketball. So, yeah, tonight, hey, we all know how great San Diego State is defensively. I don't think they have the offense to beat UConn. 7.5 is a big number. But when you look at the way that UConn has played in this tourney, where they beat Iona 87-63, they beat St. Mary's 70-55, they beat Arkansas 88-65, Gonzaga 82-54, Miami 72-59. I think UConn's winning tonight, and I think they're covering the 7.5. I will go on sides. And by the way, that avalanche of UConn, like you mentioned, Iona and St. Mary's game where they got out to slow starts, and in the second half they were just out of this world. In Arkansas, they hit you right in the mouth at the beginning of the game. That's the toughest part with this UConn team, because even if they don't look elite, you know in the back of your mind, eventually that avalanche is coming with UConn. It's kind of like Deion Sanders when he walked into Colorado. I'm coming. That's UConn. You eventually know that team is going to hit you in the mouth and they're going to knock you out. Even if it's like a fight where you're 8 rounds in and you look like you have them on the ropes, you better deliver the knockout punch. Because if you let them get off out of that corner, fight off the ropes and eventually start to jab back, they will knock you on your ass. And I don't think San Diego State can out-duel them for 40 minutes. And even more if it does go into overtime. And what concerns me about San Diego State, you just saw Miami. Miami played horribly in that first half against Texas. And then came back, got the victory to put themselves in the Final Four. Then they got blown out. Blown out by UConn the other night. I look at a team like San Diego State. They just did what Miami did to Texas, coming on back and beating FAU. Can they find a way to survive early against UConn? Because Miami was not able to. So I'll go on sides there. UConn's going to win the game, and they're going to cover the 7.5.
So the men's championship will go on later tonight. The women's championship was decided yesterday as LSU won their first women's basketball title in school history.
With 9.9 million viewers.
9.9 million viewers.
Record breaker.
A massive, massive audience for that big game. And unfortunately, all 9.9 million saw the game end in controversy. Tigers star Angel Reese at the end of the game did flash the John Cena, "You can't see me."
You got to say that right. It's the, "You can't see me."
See, I'm not a WWE guy, so I'll leave that for you.
So I'm not a WWE guy either because I grew up, but.
Wow. Jeez.
If Taz was working here, I still wouldn't say that.
Holy, yeah. I bet.
Taz and I was like the only person Taz liked around here. I was the only one requested by Taz to fill in with them when Moose was out.
Well, hopefully he never hears this audio.
But when I was growing up, I was a huge WWE fan. My three favorite wrestlers growing up, John Cena was one, Batista was two, and then Rey Mysterio with the 619 kick. That was number three for me. So those are my three favorite wrestlers growing up. And when John Cena did the, "You can't see me," that was awesome.
So Angel Reese did do the, "You can't see me," towards Iowa star Caitlin Clark.
People's ears just got chopped off like their Van Gogh.
Well, I mean, anyone does it that's not John Cena, they're going to butcher it. So he's perfected it. I clearly have not.
I thought I did a good job.
It was solid. I now also have never heard it, so I can't compare.
"You can't see me." Boom.
There you go. Boom.
I just did the move. You can't see it because we're on the radio.
But
we're not like all the other shows that have TV deals and YouTube deals and all that. We're just the true radio guys here.
And the move did look good. So for the audience of one that you did it for, I appreciate it. And again, for not knowing the move, it looked good to me.
At first, I'm like, audience of one. I'm like, what a jackass hickey is. I'm like, oh, because no one else could physically see us.
That's right. That is right.
Besides Kaplan. I know Kaplan is somewhere here on one of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cameras, seven cameras that are in front
always
of me.
Always watching.
Kaplan's always watching. He's like Big Brother.
That he is. He is the Big Brother at CBS Sports Radio.
I'm watching you, Kaplan, somewhere.
So not only did Angel Reese do the John Cena move, she also pointed at her ring finger to indicate LSU is about to get some new jewelry, all in the face of, again, Iowa star Caitlin Clark. And this sparked a massive, massive debate, massive controversy of whether Reese was classless in her celebration. After the game, Clark said she had no problem with the celebration as well. Onsides or offsides, you, Zach, have a problem with Angel Reese taunting Caitlin Clark.
Did I think it was a little bit excessive? Sure. And I know, right, there's history with Caitlin Clark doing the "You can't see me" first. And I guess Angel Reese was disrespected or felt as if she shouldn't have done that. And then she wanted to throw it back in her face. That's part of sports. But overall, I don't have a big problem with this. The only part that I thought was a little like over the line was just following her for a while. Like, if you want to do it at first and walk away, that's fine. But overall, it was showing emotion. You may not like it, but I can't sit here and be up in arms and freaking out and going furious about this like so many people are that really don't care about the game and are watching their first women's game for the entire season. So I don't have a huge problem with this, so I will go offsides when you ask me that.
Offside.
The only thing I would say is, you know, you could do the celebration, do the ring finger point and all that. You don't have to follow Caitlin Clark around. It was like she was trying to have Caitlin Clark acknowledge her. And sometimes that's the best when someone's going after you, where you just kind of just smile or laugh at them and that infuriates them even more. But Angel Reese gets a last laugh because she has what Caitlin Clark wanted. And that was the ring that she'll eventually get on her finger.
You know, it's more ridiculous that is getting zero attention because of this new controversy that should actually get actual warranted ridiculous takes.
Are you talking about the other video?
No. What other video?
Oh, you didn't see the video of the other LSU player who they, I guess they were interviewing her. Maybe when the Final Four started, or maybe this was the tournament started, Alexis Morris. And she was saying, oh, the one person I'm excited to meet here is, and maybe this is right before the national championship, is Caitlin Clark. And then as she's saying that, and she even said, I don't usually say I'm excited to meet players. Caitlin Clark walks by and they had a little embrace. I thought that was a really cool moment between the two.
Oh, I did not see that. No, that is cool. I was going to say the quote-unquote disrespect LSU felt because there was a video of Caitlin Clark going back to Friday night when she basically threw, like, you know, kind of waved off a South Carolina player who was at the three-point line wide open.
Yeah.
Because South Carolina doesn't shoot threes, and LSU tried to basically say, I feel disrespected that Caitlin Clark thought she could guard someone like that. I'm going to take that as motivation going to Sunday, which is ridiculous.
Yes.
Which is absolutely absurd, which is actually laughable, the fact that you're going to try to have that bulletin board material start and not realize it's part of the game plan. And, oh, by the way, work to perfection.
And then afterwards, I saw Angel Reese was on Instagram Live, and she said to one of her teammates, yeah, Caitlin Clark wasn't doing the wave off tonight. Now, we all know athletes, they find the little things to get them motivated and maybe more so than they need to. I didn't have a problem with Caitlin Clark doing that, just like I don't really have a big deal with what Angel Reese did after the game. But I will agree with you, when coaches and players try to, like, pump up, oh, we root for the teams in our conference, could you ever imagine, let's say Michigan, Ohio State, Blake Corum gets a big touchdown, and he saw early in the year someone did something to Marvin Harrison Jr., and then in that moment when Michigan wins it all, he does the celebration back to basically say, yeah, I did that for my brothers at Ohio State. Big Ten pride. Like, what are we doing here? I know you're friends in the conference, but what are we doing? You're right. That's a good job by you bringing that up. Because when I heard that part, I'm like, okay, are you really that annoyed with what Caitlin Clark did that you're doing it to kind of get revenge for South Carolina? That doesn't make sense to me.
Stupid. Absolutely stupid. Let's continue with women's basketball because Kim Mulkey did complete one of the most impressive turnarounds in sports.
She scares me. Like, if I was a grandchild of Kim Mulkey, I would do everything Kim Mulkey says. She is a very intimidating person. And I remember Matt Rhule told me this story where they asked when he was at Baylor to use the gym so the coaches could run like the football coaches could run a pickup game. And Kim Mulkey, I guess her office is on the balcony. And she got out on the balcony and said, you guys better start playing some defense or I'm yanking you off the court. And then all of a sudden, the coaches started playing defense. She's a very intimidating person.
Not a coincidence that wherever she goes, they win because she is doing something right, including...
I would just start sprinting if I played for her because I would just assume I would do something wrong and I have to get on the line and just start sprinting as if it was Miracle.
Yeah, she's no nonsense, and that helps take a doormat of a program to national championship heights in just two short years. Now, if you look at the NFL, right, because Kim Mulkey did this in year two at LSU... There are eight head coaches going into 2023 that will enter year number two, including Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins, Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings,
Todd Bowles. Is this a football question?
This is a football question.
From Kim Mulkey?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, she won a national title in year number two at LSU for a team that was a long ways away from winning a championship. So look at the NFL in terms of year two coaches. Bowles with the Bucks, Josh McDaniels with the Raiders, Brian Daboll with the Giants, Matt Eberflus with the Bears, Doug Peterson with the Jags, Dennis Allen of the Saints. All eight of those coaches entering year number two. So if Kim Mulkey did it at LSU, onsides or offsides, of these eight coaches listed, Doug Peterson is the coach most likely to win the Super Bowl in 2023.
So McDaniel, O'Connell, Todd Bowles, McDaniels, Daboll, Eberflus, Dougie P, and Dennis Allen. Why'd you laugh so much on Josh McDaniels?
Because there's no shot in hell this guy's going from zero to hero.
Yeah, it is Doug Peterson. O'Connell, as long as Kirk Cousins is their quarterback, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. Mike McDaniel, I can't trust his quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa. Todd Bowles, without Brady, that franchise is going to crumble. McDaniels, I agree with you, no shot. Daboll took a nice step in year one, but I don't think they're close to winning a Super Bowl. Eberflus and the Bears, they've improved, but they're not ready. Dennis Allen, I don't trust Derek Carr in a big game. So, yeah, it's got to be Doug Peterson. They'll win that division. They'll be a double-digit win team. Trevor Lawrence now in year number three, really year number two after the disaster of Urban Meyer in year number one. You're adding Calvin Ridley. Yeah, out of those eight teams with Doug Peterson's
Super Bowl winning experience as a coach, I think they'd be the most likely out of those eight to win the Super Bowl in 2023. On sides.
The Dallas Mavericks have an extremely tough decision to make. Tank the rest of the year or try to make the play-in tournament. Now, Sham Sharani is reporting that Dallas is considering shutting down both Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie,
for the final three games of the season. Now, Dallas is currently in 11th place, one game out of the play-in, but basically, in order to make the play-in tournament, they need to win out and need either the Thunder, Lakers, or Timberwolves to lose out, and then they will get at least a 10th seed and keep their season alive. Now, why the ability or why the thought of tanking comes into play the last three games is that they do owe the Knicks a first-round pick that is top 10 protected, so they are in the top 10. They keep that first-round pick for this upcoming year. Onsides or offsides, the Mavericks should tank the rest of the season in order to keep their first-round pick.
Can I give you my fan analysis and then my talk show host analysis?
Sure.
The fan analysis is you should go all out for it. Because solely based off one thing, you know Kyrie would love to tank these final three games so he could start his vacation early. I don't want to see Kyrie start his vacation early, so therefore I want them to play. Now, my actual answer here is I do think that they should tank. Because they're not going to be in this position you would think again to potentially get a top 10 pick. And even if you do make the play-in tournament, I don't think you're going all that far because this team has been a disaster this year. And it's not even a lock that you'll make the play-in tournament anyway. So I would say, yeah, even though this is tanking is a weird word for me here, because I think tanking is like intentionally trying to lose like half your season or your entire season. For the last three games, I think tank gets a little sensationalized here. But I would say that if that's the question, the Mavs should tank the rest of the season to keep their first round pick. I would go on sides on that one.
And finally, Hard Knocks team selection is down to four teams: Jets, Bears, Commanders, and Saints. New York eventually will have their new quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, while the Bears do have DJ Moore and now a boatload of picks, in which will be a big season for their quarterback in Justin Fields. The Saints do welcome a new quarterback, Derek Carr, to town, while Washington could have new ownership take over, and who knows what could happen from there. So on sides or off sides, of those four teams, Jets, Bears, Commanders, Saints, up for Hard Knocks. The Jets are the team you most want to see this year.
It's offsides.
Offsides.
Even though they're going to have Rodgers and probably Odell, I want to see the Commanders because Hard Knocks has gotten stale. Correct me if I'm wrong, Hickey. I don't think we've ever seen an ownership change go down on Hard Knocks. Like, we've seen almost everything that could happen in the coaching world and then also with players. I would just love to see how they are going to handle that ownership change. It may be nerdy, it may be boring, but that would excite me the most. If I am making this list, I would go Commanders 1, Jets 2, Bears 3, Saints 4, but I would think the team that does get on is actually the Bears. I think it will end up being the Bears, but personally, I'd rather see the Commanders and Jets, and I would go Commanders over the Jets. But how about like an ownership change? If that's the way that goes down on Hard Knocks, that would be fascinating.
What would they, I guess, what would they broadcast?
The new owner coming into the team, or maybe if it takes a delay, I don't think they would trash Snyder publicly, but maybe there's some things behind the scenes. I already see Jason Wright is already talking how they expect this to go down, and they don't see why it wouldn't. So I'd just be curious if there is a hiccup in that. What happens? Like at this point, I've heard and seen everything from Aaron Rodgers. Like I don't need to see any more Aaron Rodgers than the time that's allotted to.
I guess I'll ask this. If it's sold within the next month, which is what a lot of people are saying is going to happen, if it goes down in May,
we'll
does that change your answer to the question?
No, because I'd like to know more about the new ownership group, and then maybe some people in the organization with Dan Snyder no longer there speak a little bit more truthfully when the camera gets in front of them. So I would want it to be the Commanders. All right, Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gilb Show.
You can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. We've been talking about the interaction at the end of the game between Angel Reese from LSU and then also Caitlin Clark from Iowa. And I think a lot of this is just a great overreaction when it comes to a lot of people and their takes in the last 24 hours after the game did end. But I'll say this. This may be the dumbest take of them all. This is from Jill Biden, the first lady. I know we'll have the champions come to the White House. We always do. So we hope LSU will come, she said. This is via the Associated Press. But you know, I'm going to tell Joe I think Iowa should come too because they played such a good game. Now the team that loses in the national championship game, we have to invite to the White House? It's like we just give participation trophies out to everyone now. And don't get me wrong, Iowa went on a remarkable run. Caitlin Clark, she brought so many viewers to the TV set. We saw 9.9 million people tuning in during the national championship game. Give her all the flowers, all the praise in the world. People compare her to Steph Curry. She's a joy to watch. But now we have to invite her team to the White House because of the great game that they played in the national championship game? Like, give me a break. You know, did LSU not shoot 54% from the field? 65% almost from three? And oh yeah, LSU had 11 more rebounds. Don't get me wrong, Iowa had a great season, but they did not play a great championship game. They lost by 17 points. Now, offensively, their numbers were fine, but defensively, they were atrocious. So, Hickey, I know we don't usually get political on this show, and we usually stay out of that stuff, but what a joke this is. The First Lady of the United States saying, yeah, I'm going to tell my husband, the President Joe Biden, I think Iowa should get an invite to the White House as well. I'm sorry. That does not make sense to me.
It's ridiculous. I would agree with that. Now, if you want to separately, in a different time, maybe the summertime, invite Caitlin Clark to recognize her greatness, absolutely. Caitlin Clark herself, the individual player, was tremendous. She was the face of women's basketball this season. She lifted literally almost by herself, basically, Iowa to the national title game. You want to bring her, give her a medal of freedom? I don't know what you would give, recognize her in some way. Okay, no problem. You can't bring Iowa to the White House. You can't bring Caitlin Clark to the White House anytime near LSU is going to be there. Spread it out. Bring Caitlin Clark in like a Tuesday in June. Bring her over there. Recognize her great season. Because I think recognition of her great season is warranted. She's a great player. Can't bring Iowa the team. You cannot bring the second place team. It hasn't been done before. This should not be a new trend starting now.
You know, I also heard from a few years ago they're going to bring the Atlanta Falcons to the White House because they played three great quarters in the Super Bowl before choking a 28-3 lead. Like, is this what we're going to do now? They played a great game, those Atlanta Falcons.
What about the Eagles this past year?
Oh,
played
yeah.
Really well against the Chiefs.
Eagles are up 10 at halftime. We got to invite the Eagles to the White House now. A few years ago, no one would go to the White House. Now, you may have both teams going to the White House.
And Natty McDonald's.
Oh, remember the LSU?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I mean, do you keep tradition? And when LSU champions come to the White House, Big Macs and double fries. Let's
go. Lot of dancing, too. The LSU football players, they did a lot of dancing.
A lot of TikToks that day.
No, those were great, no doubt about it. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Earlier, we were talking about this report that maybe, and this is from things that Daniel Jeremiah was hearing, that he's been hearing speculation about Las Vegas with the Raiders and Tennessee with the Titans could be moving up to the third overall pick to select a quarterback. Let's go to Jay in Alaska, who is our big-time Raiders fan who calls us all the time. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? How you fellas been?
I'm great. I've been... Now, Jay, this is Jay in Alaska, the Raiders fan, correct, Amundo?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I don't know if you know this, Jay. A few weeks ago, we had a big Raiders topic. I forget what it was. And a Jay in Alaska called in, and I thought it was you for the first 30 minutes, for the first 30 seconds. And then it was you. So there's another Jay in Alaska that calls this show, and he does tweet us a lot, so I figured out who it was. But usually when I see Jay in Alaska on the phone lines, I just assume it's you.
Well, you know, there, a lot of people try to impersonate me, but, you know, there's only one me.
And no one can replicate you. That is for sure.
Hey, man, I'm feeling good because at least I don't have to boycott the season because they didn't freaking get Tom Brady. Thank God that guy retired.
You should be kissing Tom Brady's feet if he wanted to save your organization.
No, I cannot stand that guy. I will not ever.
You should be like Rex Ryan with the feet if Brady elected to go to that loser Raiders organization.
Well, you know, I know McClown Boy will not do the right thing, Zach. I know he won't.
Well, you changed his name.
McClown Boy.
You used to call him McIdiot.
Well, he's McClown Boy. He's a clown. It's the clown show. How do you get rid of Darren Waller? How are you trying to get rid of Hunter Renfro? I mean, you had players in place that were actually producing, and unless they get Darnell Washington in the draft, he's a clown. I mean, he's an idiot. I'm sorry. And you know what they should do is go out and get the number one D tackle in the league, Jalen Carter. No matter what his record is, put him in there next to Max Crosby so that defense is decent. And then go get, like I was telling Hickey, go get Jake Haener in the third round, develop that kid, and let him be a, you know, your starter down the road. But they won't. They'll go jump up and get, you know, Richardson or Levis, and it'll be a complete disaster. And the only good thing about that is at least McClown Boy will get fired because the team will be terrible next year, and then we'll finally get rid of that loser. But, you know, they never do what they need to do and do the smart thing.
So you fully expect them, even though you don't want them to, Jay, to move up, you know, that they'll move into that three spot and select either Richardson or Levis.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. And they'll probably give up like five picks and to move up and do something totally stupid, and the team will be a bunch of has-been, no-good, over-the-hill, washed-up freaking expatriate players. It's ridiculous. That's all we do is hire, hey, let's get Amir Abdullah way past his prime. Let's get Jakob Johnson way past his prime.
Hey, he's a good
let's
fullback.
Get Brandon Bolden way past his prime. Let's get everybody that's past their prime that used to play for the Patriots that now suck, and let's put them on the Raiders.
Well, if I could hope to give you some positivity, at least Jakobi Meyers has already thrown a touchdown pass for your team. So there's one.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was the only move that they've made so far that I think is.
But that's the thing, Jay. If they bring in Jakobi Meyers, which they already did, I thought, okay, you would lose Renfro. Like, that would then make sense to me. To then trade Waller, and now you still have Renfro, and who knows what's going to happen. It doesn't seem like the Raiders got that much better this offseason. Like, pick your poison with Garoppolo, Carr. It doesn't really matter to me. Carr, is a healthier quarterback, so I would slightly want him maybe more, but then Garoppolo wins more. But then to lose Waller on top of that and only add in Jakobi Meyers, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and tell me how this makes sense. Keelan Cole, who didn't do jack last year, he was hurt all year, and you bring him back, but you get rid of Mack Hollins, one of the most highly producing guys on the team. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
Mack Hollins is your beat.
But
and,
once,
you know, and they brought the kid from the Skins. He's a big kid, and hopefully he can be that Mack Hollins guy. But I mean, come on, they just blew the team up basically to get their guys, and it's just stupid.
All right, Jay, hang in there. We appreciate it. You know what? I can't fault them for getting rid of Mack Hollins, Hickey. Because when I saw him come to our studios, and 2 years ago I met Mack Hollins at an event, really nice guy. And I've interviewed him before because he got drafted by the Eagles coming out of UNC. But a year ago when he came in studio with no shoes on, I thought that was weird. And then I saw him at Radio Row inside the convention center. I thought it was like all shtick, but he's not wearing shoes. I get it. He's had a good last few seasons. I can't have Mack Hollins on my team if he's walking around with no shoes on.
Spreading athlete's foot. Can't have that. Also, next thing you know, like, you know, Jimmy G's foot now is itchy. Max Crosby's foot is like burning, and you wonder who brought it into the locker room.
Now, Ack, I know you're a pretty clean person.
No, actually, that's a misnomer.
Really?
I'm a slob, yeah.
But you everyone thinks that, like, you're very clean.
Well, they think wrong.
Are you a hoarder?
No. Well, yeah, kind of. You know, I mean, you go through my basement. Yeah, I still have my hockey helmet from 1972, the Walt Kachuk autographed model.
Now, I don't know what the proper word here is for you. Germaphobe, is that the right word?
Yeah, I just don't like sitting in other people's filth.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
Just so, you want to sit in your own filth.
Yeah, exactly.
But you would never walk around New York City or a convention center at the Super Bowl this past year in Arizona with no shoes on.
No, it's not good. It hurts the feet.
Especially for someone that needs his feet, too.
Yes.
And it's also just disgusting. It's dirty.
Yeah, there's got to be some decorum.
There you go. The official ACT ruling. Yes. I don't know. Whenever I see Mack Hollins, I think of you.
Thank you.
Because everyone says ACT's the cleanest person here. He's like a germaphobe, but
filthy.
You are filthy, but it's just your own filth.
Yeah, ask Kenny Albert. He lived with me for 4 years.
Oh, in college?
Yeah.
Was he a clean roommate?
He was organized.
But you were a slob.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, but I know where everything is. Like, you know, underneath that corned beef sandwich that's been there for 3 weeks.
No!
No, I know. I'm not that bad. But I do know, like, you know, on the left side in the middle of the pile, there's, you know, there's my tax return from, you know, 1987.
So you're a mess, but just an organized mess.
I know where, yeah, I know where. That's why when people clean, you know, it drives me crazy. Like, where was that tax return? I know it was here.
There you go. All righty. Well, I don't know how we're going to recover from that. We'll do the news brief next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All right, let's start things off with Danny Hurley, the coach of the UConn Huskies, looking to have the program win their fifth national championship tonight. He says being a big favorite, as they're currently a 7.5-point favorite against San Diego State, that game does tip off at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, is not a good thing.
The heavy favorites haven't fared very well in this one, so I don't really, we're just going to try to, ignore that tag.
So I understand past history, but you look at this UConn team, they remind me a lot like Villanova, the third Villanova championship, but the second under Jay Wright, with how dominant they were in that tourney. And then also Baylor from a few years ago with Scott Drew. They didn't really have to break a sweat. Are you concerned, Tiki, about UConn being a big favorite? Because you look back at the last two matchups, everyone was picking them to beat Gonzaga, besides you and I. Everyone was picking them to beat Miami, besides you and I. And now it's like, all right, they're in the championship game. Outside of like 3 weeks in the season, they really haven't had to break much of a sweat. And they really have that, you know, outside of that little rough patch of adversity, they've been a phenomenal team. I can't pick against them. I cannot pick against them tonight. And if you maybe put a bet down on the game, I would lay the 7.5 points.
I would agree. Let me ask you this question. If they lose, let's play this game.
Disaster.
It's the biggest disappointment in a championship game. I was just putting on the spot. I have an idea. Let me see if there's any other teams that you could think of.
Biggest disappointment in a championship game.
I would say since the 07 Patriots.
That far?
Now, I racked my brain quick, but, I mean, now no one gave the Giants a shot in that game, rightfully so. Like, you try to think of, like, you know, when you get, like, there's been upsets in the playoffs.
The Patriots were better than the UConn were, clearly. The Patriots were undefeated that year.
Right, but you look at how UConn has ripped through everybody. Like, they have blown everybody out. No team is on there, you know, has been in their class so far. So you look at how dominant they've been in these five games.
And you're saying just in the championship game?
Yes.
Okay, because like I was going to say, we had a 16-1.
Right,
in this 20,
and it, like in terms of like championship, like an actual championship game where so many people thought, oh, this team is going to win for sure. We've had plenty of split discussions where this year, Chiefs-Eagles, right? There's people on both sides thinking that that team could win. I feel like you rarely get to a game that is so one-sided of no chance this other team is going to win, and then we see it happen in the championship game.
Yeah, because like I'm just thinking when there was some surprise, like when Clemson beat Alabama, I don't think anyone was shocked by that.
Especially because the year before was with that thriller of a game.
When the Patriots lost to the Eagles in the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, I picked the Eagles to win. I'm a Patriot fan. Yeah, I'm going through it. I think you may be right. Because no one's giving San Diego State a shot in this game tonight.
And that's where that, like, it's not right. I'm not saying the UConn and OSU Patriots are the same, but
no,
it's like in terms of confidence of winning tonight, if they lose this game, it is one of the most colossal L's like we could see from a team that's that close.
Well, some would say heading into the Final Four even.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I know we gave Miami a lot of credit, but even John Fanta was saying it seems like this is UConn and everybody else when he was at the Final Four to start this, to end last week.
Did you hear Dan Hurley in the locker room after the game?
No, what did he say?
Basically said, yeah, I'm not even going to celebrate. We knew we were going to win this game. As soon as he walked in, he goes, all right, fellas.
Stop
like,
the fight. Stop tonight's over. It's over.
That was how confident they were going into that game.
And also, can Bob Sr. crack a smile if they win tonight? I love Bob Hurley Sr. But you got to give me a smile if your son wins at all. They blew out Miami. We couldn't even get a little smile there from the coach.
I mean, you know, classic coach. It's never over till it's over. You're always going panicking about what happens. Until I think when the streamers come down, you'll see Bob Senior smile.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago when Rolly Massimino, the late great coach, was in the stands when you had the Chris Jenkins shot. His face was priceless afterwards. It was one of those images that you'll always remember. I would say it's not even a smile that you see from Bob Hurley Sr. tonight, assuming UConn wins. I think it's got to be a lot of tears. I think it's going to be tears of joy coming from Bob Hurley Sr. tonight. Let's hear Danny Hurley saying that San Diego State's veteran presence and physicality will pose challenges.
Yeah, they're physical. They're an older team. I think, I don't know if I read that they're, if there's five, they've got an older team than like five NBA teams, you know, so you're, or at least I saw that graphic during an NCAA game.
They play great defense, San Diego State, Hickey. I just, with how many pieces UConn has, I just don't see how San Diego State's going to score more points than UConn tonight, unless everyone on UConn is just in ridiculous foul trouble.
And that's the thing, too, this game. It's not only the fact that, you know, because you look at San Diego State's defense, okay, maybe they can slow down UConn, but UConn's defense has just been as good as their offense. So it's like, okay, if San Diego State's defense actually plays a good game, and let's say they slow UConn down and the game's in the 50s, can you actually trust San Diego State to get to 50 with how UConn's been playing defense? It's tough to get there.
What's your score prediction tonight? If I had to put you on the spot here.
I will say 73-59.
Wow. We're pretty close. I'm going 76-58, UConn.
It's...
And I don't usually predict the score to be that wide of a margin, but I'm feeling 76-58, the Huskies. Let's hear Danny Hurley on how his team's been able to blow everyone out in this tournament.
Going like plus nine on the glass, playing elite defense, and then having a lot of answers on offense. You know, there's nowhere where we're weak as a team, and we're deep.
They are deep. And Sonogo goes out of the game when he's playing great. Klingon comes in. You just can't stop this team. Let's hear Brian Dutcher, who's done a great job building up this program with Steve Fisher, then has taken it over since 2017. Coach Dutch says the Aztecs have built a special program.
If you're winning games with kids that don't graduate and bad kids, no one's going to feel good about that. But if you have kids with good grades and graduating good citizens, you don't win, no one's going to like that either. So we've been able to put a program together, we have all those things. We have really good kids that are really good citizens and are really good basketball players.
So it's important to be a good citizen and be a good basketball player, but Hickey, if people win a championship with a bunch of one and dones, as we've seen before, I don't think anyone's like, gotta send back that championship. It was one and done. Who really cares?
I like how he's honest. You can have great kids, you don't win, you're getting fired still.
Yeah. Lamont Butler, who hit the game-winning shot at the buzzer, this is from Saturday, discusses what he was able to do on the court.
Dutch decided not to call a timeout at the end. It was about 7 seconds left when we got the ball, and he told me just to go downhill and try to get some at the rim, but they did a good job cutting me off. Once I looked up, it was 2 seconds left, so I knew I had to make a shot, and I got to a shot that I'm comfortable with, a one dribble pull-up, and I'm just glad I went in.
Let's go to Angel Reese of LSU, national champion, on why she taunted Caitlin Clark at the end of the championship game.
The narrative, I don't fit the narrative. I don't fit in the box that y'all want me to be in. I'm too hood. I'm too ghetto. Y'all told me that all year. But when other people do it, y'all don't say nothing. So this was for the girls that look like me, that's going to speak up on what they believe in. It's unapologetically you. And that's what I did it for tonight. This was for the more. It was bigger than me tonight. It was bigger than me. Twitter is going to go in a rage every time. And I mean, I'm happy. I feel like I've helped grow women's basketball this year. I'm super happy and excited.
So I respect that answer. But then I also heard another answer, Hickey, that you brought up, that she did it for her fellow members of the SEC after the way that Caitlin Clark was basically saying she's not going to guard them when South Carolina was refusing to shoot a three-point shot. Like, that to me, I don't really buy that. That part of the answer. I know it wasn't said in that clip, but we've seen the clip of it being said. And I use this analogy before, I'll bring it again. Blake Corum defeats some team in the national championship game, let's just say, and maybe OSU was disrespected, or they thought to be disrespected the way there. Is Blake Corum going to say, oh, Marvin Harrison Jr., I celebrated for you? No, because Michigan hates Ohio State. I'm not saying you're not allowed to have friends in conference at other schools, but I don't think you do that to Caitlin Clark, which I didn't really have a big problem with it. You know, it got a little excessive when you're following around, but I didn't have a big problem with it, you know, for other I understand doing it for people that don't look like you, that you know, get, unfortunately, these things said about them. That part of the answer I respect, but to say it was to do it to the way that Caitlin Clark disrespected the rest of the SEC, like that part, I roll my eyes at a little bit.
It's just also just stupid because you don't really realize the game plan. South Carolina can't shoot threes.
Yeah.
They're not going to guard the three. LSU can. Caitlin Clark's game plan and Iowa's game plan on that game on Friday versus Sunday, two different things.
Let's get to Caitlin Clark on if she noticed Angel Reese taunting her at the end of the game.
Honestly, I have no idea. I was just trying to get to the handshake line and shake hands and, you know, be grateful that my team was in that position. You know, that's all you can do is, you know, hold your head high, be proud of what you did, and, you know, all the credit in the world to LSU. You know, they were tremendous. They deserve it. They had a tremendous season. Kim Mulkey coached them so, so well. You know, she's one of the best basketball coaches of all time, and it shows. And she only said really kind things to me in the handshake line, so I'm very grateful for that, too. But honestly, I have no idea.
And let me be clear about this. I think a lot of this has been an overreaction on both sides. If all Angel Reese did was just do the you can't see me and point to the finger for like 5 seconds, that's fine. I just think where some people get a little bit annoyed about is how long it did go on. But outside of that, I don't think there's really much to freak out about with this. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Shaka Smart next.